When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Hello, everyone. I am your host, Kathy Hackle, and welcome to Tech Magic, the podcast where we talk about technology, gaming, artificial intelligence, spatial computing, and everything in between. I am joined by my guest co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, how you doing?
I'm good. We had a great weekend. I couldn't be happier right now. Great.
Well, I don't want to talk so much about what I did over the weekend, and we can talk about that towards the end. I want to talk about what I just wrapped up. The NVIDIA's GTC, which is their developers conference, mm-hmm. for people that don't know. GTC is their developers conference. The keynote just wrapped up. And it's like the Woodstock for nerdy people. Amazing.
That's a good way of putting it, yes.
Yeah. Literally, Jensen, the CEO, even mentioned, you would think this is like a concert, a rock concert. It's not, but he's a rock star. And amazing. I mean, NVIDIA's being the darling of the AI world, moving from GPUs for gaming to creating chips for AI and everything. Their keynote just blew my mind. I have so much to talk about and kind of share with you about it. So, yeah, just extremely powerful. And there's two events happening this week. NVIDIA's mm-hmm. GTC conference, or developers conference for NVIDIA, which had the keynote today, and also the start of GDC, which is the game developers conference, which is obviously related but separate. These are two very different things. Lots of folks in the Bay Area for GTC and GDC. So yeah, it's a really interesting moment. Lots of different announcements. I think we're going to hear tons of stuff from NVIDIA's conference, also from GDC. We're already seeing Roblox with announcements. So we can dig into it. I'll give you my impression of GTC's keynote. Obviously, Jensen focused very much on the tech and specifics, and it's a very kind of like technical kind of event. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. there were some really interesting perspectives on the things that they're doing, how they're approaching AI, how they're thinking about it from the longer term. Obviously, people that listen to the podcast have heard me talk a lot about the future of large language models, which I call large vision models, and kind of, AI that is learning from video, AI that is learning from visuals, AI that is going to learn from the spatial computing, information that's going to be, that we're going to see through these devices. And that was very present during the keynote. I was literally just smiling when he got to a part. They talked a lot about AI and robotics, which to me, robotics is an important part of spatial computing, related to how human and computer interaction are going to change, and robots and virtual beings, all these things navigating the physical world. So he talked about AI understanding the physical world. They use the term accelerated computing or accelerating computing instead of spatial computing, but I think that we're all arriving at the same place in some ways. So that was interesting. They launched a new computer called Blackwell. It's really a GPU.
Yeah.
Amazing, massive. I mean, it's literally everyone was clapping and everything. So that was really interesting. But yeah, they talked a lot about AI that can understand the physical world, that can navigate the physical world. One of the things they announced was also that starting now, I think, Omniverse, which is their simulation, let's say their metaverse platform or their simulation platform, is going to be streaming into the Apple Vision Pro. So that is going to be super powerful. So the Apple Vision Pro did make a kind of a cameo and an appearance in the keynote, which is really exciting.
Very interesting, yeah.
That got me really excited. And then they had a whole big announcement towards the end, super sci-fi, about robotics once again. Where does this go? AI that can see the world, AI that is learning from humans, but also videos and all these sorts of things. They had a whole bunch of like robots, humanoid robots on stage with Jensen. They had two little robots called Green and Orange, I believe, from Disney on stage with him that finished up the keynote. So yeah, just overall, like if someone watched, especially the last quarter, I would say, of the keynote, they would have thought they were watching like a sci-fi movie.
Sure, yeah.
It was fantastic. It was, I mean, that was my favorite part, actually. So yeah, I mean, he talked a lot about depth perception, which obviously you and I know is a big part of spatial and what these devices are going to allow us to do. Perspective, perception, recognition, you know, sharing the world with us. He talked about a new industrial revolution, a new era of computing. So very much aligned to what you and I have been talking about. But yeah, this is literally fresh. Like the keynote literally just ended.
it's interesting to hear them talk about a lot of like, and this is going to sound a little silly because obviously they do make software because they have to make like firmware for their drivers and stuff like that. But they're not really known as like a software company. They're really known as a hardware company. Yeah. And even deeper than that, they're known as a chip manufacturing company, right? Like, so they're starting to elevate past, but they're almost in the same conversation as like Intel and AMD in many ways, but they've got a different like approach to where their focus is being on graphics. And as they start talking about AI and that integration of like how computer vision has to come into play and spatial computing starts establishing itself, I'm really curious more and more of like what partnerships they're going to be making. Who are they going to hang their hat on and say, this is who we're going to go to for these type of like models and engines and things like that. Because by and large, they've been pretty agnostic when it comes to where they play. They kind of want to be a little bit of everywhere. But as we start seeing companies start to develop that rival OpenAI and Gemini and Bard, and like we're going to get alphabet soup of AI models here in a little bit, and you can't eat it all. You just can't eat the entire bowl of soup. So it'll be very interesting to see where they selectively focus, because wherever they do, I think those are the libraries that inevitably get the upper hand, right? Like those, they get that little boost that maybe they're a little bit further behind at launch. But if NVIDIA goes and says, we're going to like start working with Gemini, then all of a sudden, all of this backtracking that we've seen over the last year with Gemini kind of competing with OpenAI and OpenAI having the upper hand, it really could level the playing field quickly. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
They mentioned during the keynote Siemens and partnering with them on using Omniverse. And obviously Siemens has been championing the industrial metaverse.
Yep.
So they even had a whole video narrated by the CEO, which is fantastic. Michael Dell was there, talked about Dell partnership with them. They talked about some of the new things that they're working on being on Azure. So they included a lot of potential partners. They obviously talked about OpenAI. To me, what you're pointing out is really interesting because they are focusing, and I think this is key, they are focusing on visual models. Whether I call them vision or visual models.
Sure.
They understand that's where the future is headed, right? And that's where they can play. With Omniverse, for example, they talk a lot about this is a platform where you can train robots in virtual simulations before they hit the physical world, right? I think that they understand how they go from hardware to software and what makes them different, right? Because, you know, most of the companies that are focusing on large language models are limited to large language models. They understand that vision is the future to power robotics, right? So I think that that is a differentiator. And that to me is key on why NVIDIA is being so incredibly smart here. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, this will be interesting. And then if you pair that, what you just mentioned, with the fact that there were news that came out, I don't know if this is true or not, but Mark Gurman was talking about it in Bloomberg, that Apple had been talking to OpenAI right. at some point about powering their new generative AI efforts. Now they're talking to Google, right? So this is interesting. Once again, this is about to get more interesting, especially when we talk about devices that understand the physical world, whether it's a robot, whether it's a spatial computer, whatever it is. I think NVIDIA is being incredibly smart here.
They're being smart. I would hope that they don't tip their hand like who they're partnering with too soon. Mm-hmm. Because I honestly don't think the industry is ready for it. I don't think that the playing field is there. I know a lot of people have, and rightly so, I get it, but they've put a lot of eggs in the OpenAI basket. And while I think Sam Altman has done some incredible things with OpenAI, more so than anybody currently alive.
Well,
I'm not.
That's debatable, but yeah.
I mean, publicly, right? Like bringing the concept of how to function with AI to the masses. Like, my dad can use OpenAI.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
no, okay, I agree on that part. I agree on that part.
You know what I mean?
I don't necessarily pray at the altar of Sam Altman.
No.
But I agree what you mean. From a mass market, introducing, bringing this to the masses. Yeah, I
guess. Yes, he's done the most to date.
Yeah.
That said, I don't think that OpenAI is a sure thing. I just don't. I don't think that the sure thing is known, right? And if Apple was talking with OpenAI and now they're saying, "Oh, we're going to go maybe talk to Google." Why? Why? So many question marks, right? Not necessarily flags, but just like question marks, because Google's rollout of Gemini was not like spotless. That was actually about as gnarly as it could get for a large tech company to try to roll. They had a hard last couple of months, right? But there's something there if you're getting app. Now, what is interesting is what we don't hear, what we did hear and what we don't hear, is we did hear Tim Cook admit that AI really caught them off guard.
Generative AI.
Yeah.
Large language models, generative AI.
Yeah, yeah.
That part.
Caught them off guard. So they've been playing catch up ever since. So the fact that they're willing to go play in other sandboxes is very unlike Apple, and kind of gives a little bit of that credibility to, like, maybe he was being very rare, like in a rare instance of like clarity, being transparent of like, yeah, they were maybe caught actually off guard because they're willing to have these conversations with other teams. I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems to have some validity behind it. And I love these moments because it really does mean it's anyone's game. And this whole idea of like, there's three big tech companies and you can't compete with them is completely thrown out of the window. Mm-hmm. We're at square one. And that is exciting. That kind of puts me back in that, like, maybe things can still be built in garages, like, mentality. You know what I mean? Now, obviously, you're not building the next large language model or large vision model in a garage, but you get what I'm saying. Like, it just kind of really does feel
there's like a chance for newer companies to evolve.
Yes.
And maybe the incumbents don't have everything. So we'll have to see. Here's another thing that I think you're going to find fascinating. He talked about USD. And how they're starting to use, for example, basically this, I'll boil it down to this for people to understand. USD as a standard, as a file type, et cetera. You being able to talk to the robot in human language, it interpreted in USD and then speaking back to you. Or being able to talk in human language, it creates the USD and it talks to other systems in USD. I was just kind of like, wow. Okay, this is amazing. So just initial reactions on that. They called it Chat USD.
It's not that easy. It's
That's how they made it seem. They made it seem like it works.
It may. The issue is if you're trying to solve it for, you know, like your basic Germanic languages, you know, Latin-based languages, Okay, yeah, I think that actually is pretty easy. But when you start getting into other languages like Hebrew, Hebrew is just a really hard language when it comes to computer interpretation because it's backwards to us, right? Like, it's not backwards to them. We're backwards to them, but you get what I'm saying. Like, it's in the other direction. Yeah. Or even when you get into a lot of Asian languages that are top to bottom in rows, like it's just not that simple. And you're still talking about billions of people who like rely on different languages that are not just necessarily like Germanic Latin based, you know, languages. So we'll see. It's one of those things where it's like, I think they'll be able to get it out quickly. And in English use cases, it'll probably be magical. The second you start throwing in different forms of dialects, you got Spanish, and is it Spanish as you would speak it in Costa Rica, or is it Spanish as you'd speak it in Portugal? Because that's like totally different.
Well,
things.
They speak Portuguese in Portugal, but
but it's still like a Spanish based language. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if it has that kind of nuance, like if we can take the nuances, right, of the different ways people speak languages, like even in the US, right?
Yeah.
Someone in New York and someone in Texas, like, mm-hmm. I'll have to see. I mean, I thought that part was fascinating when they talked about that chat USD and kind of creating that.
I mean, it would be great to get a standardization of any of this, right? Even if it is just for a single source language, like, you know,
yeah, single, English he talked exactly about like that single like, source. That's fine.
Then that's where you have to start. I think it's really hard to get a bunch of large companies to take any type of standard. They all want to own the standard. The whole premise of these large tech companies is to own the railroad, not the train. And that has kept us from doing so much good with technology because everyone wants to own the railroad and they all want it to be a different diameter and they all want it to like fit a different wheel. And it's just like, good Lord, it's amazing this country even got a railroad, if you ask me. Just in general, that's a totally different rant, but it's incredible to get anything where there's a standardization in modern day, like modern day standardization. Most of it came from universities. Mm-hmm. Universities were the saving grace of like the entire internet. It's how we got standardization. They all could get along, but you know, when a company like Nvidia says, "Hey, we're going to create the USD," I don't know. We'll see. I hope they do.
And then other news coming from GTC, and I just got this from Magic Leap in my email. It says introducing the AI-focused Nvidia IGX plus Magic Leap 2 XR bundle. So they're kind of mixing the Magic Leap 2 headset with Nvidia's IGX. It's more than a hardware bundle. It's an ideal developer environment for the creation of AI-centric apps right out of the box. It talks about the highlights being rich sensor data access, AR visualization and interaction, real-time data processing, and there's a healthcare focus. So that's just one thing, you know, just talking about spatial computing, kind of what's going on at GTC. And then another thing that hit my inbox earlier, we get a lot of these emails, right? From people telling us what's going on. So that's GTC. Are we ready to move on from GTC to some GDC news?
Let's go.
Let's go. I'm going to roll today. Okay. This is good. Let's get this going. Okay. So GDC, lots of things starting to come out in the news. Obviously Roblox, one of the biggest players in the, let's say, mobile gaming space and experiences. Roblox introduces AI powered avatar and texturing technologies to accelerate 3D creation. So they have announced two new tools that accelerate 3D content creation, avatar auto setup and texture generator. So yeah, those are some of the things that
are big
right
actually.
Now.
Those.
Yeah, yeah.
So like we need to take a moment and reflect on what that means because it's easy to glaze over that because it does sound like buzzwordy, you know.
Yeah. But maybe you can dive deeper being that you and I kind of have worked on this platform. We know the challenges.
Well, one of the challenges aside, a big part of the player base is the creator base, right? Mm-hmm. So you do have, this is by and large, where a lot of game developers who are off working on big Unity games now started when they were, you know, preteens on early Roblox learning how to become game developers, right? So there's this long history that I think people still think of Roblox as just like this thing where kids go play, you know, weird Lego looking games or whatever. And that's really not what it is. It's a platform for creating. It's just like Unity or Unreal as a game engine. You can go in and create games on their platform. And so a lot of people get their start there. The problem is if you want to learn how to be a game developer, you don't necessarily want to learn how to make the content, like the 3D models or the shaders or you know, the materials that would go on those 3D objects. And so you end up with like people just scrapping the internet trying to find, you know, I guess this is a brick texture, I'll put this on a wall, and now it looks like a very flat brick wall. It doesn't look good, but that's not the point. They're focusing on the game, right? So that's where you get a lot of this. So enveloping this idea of like AI for art and texturing and avatar creation is really a big deal for new developers who need to focus on like, how do I make a good game?
Yeah.
And this goes back to that conversation we had a couple, maybe last episode or the episode before, where we're talking to developers and they're saying, I'm a little worried about AI. And like, well, no, let AI fill a gap for you that you don't want to, that you don't want to fill. You know, and if you're a visual artist, you can still make visual art that's going to be better than or more unique than or like more reflective for who you are and what you see in your head for a video game than the AI will. But the AI is a good band-aid for someone who's just trying to build a brick wall. Now you don't have to worry about building a brick wall. You can go make something even more profound because you didn't just spend, you know, 5 hours making a brick wall because you're learning how to use Blender or whatever, right? So I see it as a really good step in the right direction to allow players to kind of fill in those thought gaps while they focus on the thing that they really want to make and make better. Just because a lot of time is lost on the little stuff. so that's huge for them. That's just going to be more content, more worlds. It'll make for better things, better playing, and hopefully for a better next generation for Roblox players and developers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and for the creators and everything, I agree. Especially my son, like I've mentioned before, is a Roblox developer. He hasn't built something in a while. But yeah, I think that, you know, those sorts of things are going to facilitate things for creators. Okay, that's good. And I think we're going to probably have lots of news to talk about from GDC next week. But other things happening at GDC, there was an event for women in gaming. I was actually invited to it. I wasn't able to make it, but that seems to have gone really well. That kind of pushed for more inclusivity, more women in gaming, which has always been a challenge. Not so much the women that are gamers, but I think the perception of women in the industry and how they feel and, you know, harassment in games and all those sorts of things. Right. You know, so women in the space, it's not necessarily an easy place for women to be. That's obviously, hopefully that'll change. Then XReal shows is showing off AR games at GDC 2024. So in the glasses, you know, the AR glasses that they have, a competitor to, you know, to the newer, you know, to the headsets. They've been around for a while. They seem to be selling well in Asia. And I think
they're pretty cool headsets. Like I tried one out last year at AWE and I'm genuinely impressed by them. They were really quite something, and they can really push the boundaries of what like wearable can do.
So yeah, they're unveiling some games.
That was the part that was missing, was content.
Yeah. And I think that's what they're trying to do at GDC. AWS hosted also a get together, their own side event, spotlighting generative AI and gaming. So yeah, just a lot of stuff. I mean, Ubisoft, everyone's there.
Yeah,
everyone that is in gaming is at GDC. That's a big deal. So yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of GDC news next week to talk about as well. I don't know what, do you know what Meta might be doing? Have they announced anything interesting that I might have missed?
Not that I can say on microphone.
Ah, interesting. Maybe next week then. We'll have to see. So yeah, I think, you know, just a lot of interesting news happening in that space. Let me see what else. Yeah, I think that's kind of like, I guess I'm kind of like My energy level is crazy right now because I'm like coming off of that keynote and it was insane.
I mean, there's a lot going on, and it's, this is what happens as we approach spring every year is like we have, we have NVIDIA do their event and it coincides with GDC. And then before you know it, it's going to be AWE, and it all kind of gets kicked off with CES, and it's just all of the three letter conferences in a row to just kind of get people's heads spinning, which is great. And then you kind of just wait and see how the dust settles and who's actually standing. And that has to be the stuff that you get excited about. It'll be interesting to see everything that comes out from GDC. There's always a lot of like game announcements and things like that. But as I do, here comes the wet blanket. One of the things that I am very interested to see come out of GDC is if there's any mention about PlayStation VR 2.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I'm kind of looking out for, because all of this hardware can be magical. And I honestly have this concern still with the Apple Vision Pro. You can make the best headsets in the world, and if there's no content on them, it's going to be on a struggle.
Yeah.
It just is. And one of the issues that Sony has is that the PSVR 2 is kind of paused on its production because they have so much unsold inventory.
Yeah.
That inventory is sitting on shelves because what do they have to play on it? What's the exclusive time? All of these consoles rely on exclusive gaming, right? And one of the things that Meta did really well early on is they looked at the playing field of who was building popular games, and they went and bought them. So they went and they bought Beat Saber.
Yeah.
They went and bought Population One, right? Mm-hmm. Like a bunch of these different titles that do really well.
Supernatural
and things like that. And those lock those down for the headset. So, you know, unless they choose to license it out, in which case it becomes a revenue source for Meta as well, which they can do. Sony kind of has an exclusivity problem. And this has reached past just the PSVR 2. This is now we're getting into the PlayStation itself has kind of got an exclusive titles problem. We're seeing kind of a slowdown. The console that no one could get their hands on,
the PS5, I remember. Right?
And then all of a sudden now they're just like, okay, we got it. So what am I supposed to play on this thing? And it's a big, I don't know. Like they've got some, don't get me wrong, they've got some titles, but they keep re-releasing their titles. They are in this like regeneration of old titles, and not like what Nintendo's doing. Cause everyone's heard me praise Nintendo for doing this. Nintendo's going into the vault. They're going back like 10, 20 years, pulling out games and making them new again. 30 years, pulling out games, making them new again. Sony's re-released Last of Us, I don't know, like half a dozen times at this point, and they just keep pumping it out on the next console. And it's the exact same game with minimal upgrades and like graphics. So if you're in that PlayStation ecosystem, you're starting to question, well, wait, why did I go from the 4 to the 5, really? It plays the same. And I think they got this issue with the PlayStation VR. I think it's a good headset. I really do. They made a lot of really promising, positive changes from PlayStation VR's original console to this. But what are they going to do for the games? Time will tell.
And I think we're going to go to break. After the break, I don't want to introduce this, and I'll introduce it again after break, but we have Monique Ruff Bell, who's the Chief Program and Strategy Officer for TED. TED actually just turned 40 years. Can you believe that? TED's been around for 40 years. Like 1984.
That's crazy.
Right?
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, I was like surprised by that. A wonderful interview. Anyone that, you know, loves TED or loves TED Talks or TEDx, it's a great interview to listen to. So we'll go to break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Today on the podcast, I've got an amazing guest that I think you are all going to really enjoy listening to. So we've got Monique Ruff-Bell from TED joining us today. Monique, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, Kathy.
I am so excited you're here. Before we get started, I want folks to know a little bit about who you are as a person and also what you do at TED, because you have a really amazing role over there.
Okay. I like to start off as I consider myself a karaoke queen. So before I even get into TED, let me just like put the foundational work right there.
I need to ask a follow-up to that. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh my God, you are going to be so surprised when I tell you this.
I see.
But it is Wham. Ooh. Everything She Wants is my kickoff song for all of my karaoke extravaganzas, as I like to say.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I love it.
But my day job is Chief Program and Strategy Officer for TED.
Awesome. And I'm a huge fan of what TED has brought to the world. You know, ideas, concepts, innovation, different perspectives, discourse. Like, I just love everything about it. And you guys just celebrated a big anniversary or birthday or, you know, happy birthday, TED. But tell folks a little bit about, you know, that celebration and what are some ways that you're kind of celebrating this milestone, because it really is an exciting one.
Yeah, this year was the year, our 40th anniversary. So a lot of people think, you know, they discovered TED from our platforms like YouTube, which came on the scene like in the early 2000s around that time. But TED has been around since 1984. And it was a closed door, intimate conference experience. And TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. So they would bring these change makers and builders who were doing just amazing things and, you know, bringing it to this audience to kind of discover, be inspired and motivated by all of these wonderful change makers. And so Chris Anderson started a foundation and took it over around 2004-ish, 2006, around between those years. And he made it a not-for-profit. And then YouTube kind of came on the scene and the internet was exploding and it was all about, this shouldn't be locked up. This content shouldn't just be for this small group of people. It should be given out to the world for free. And they get to see some of this amazing stuff. And so with the 40 years, we were kind of just, you know, taking a look back about what TED was. And now we're building for what TED will be in the next 40 years and beyond. And so we're celebrating at our big Vancouver conference, which is coming up in the next 5 weeks, which is basically where TED kind of started. And now we have these big flagship events all over the world. And then we have TEDx events, mm-hmm. which are about 3,000 events all over the globe. So it's amazing how TED is just such a huge part of society. It's mm-hmm. such a huge brand, and people get so inspired by our TED Talk. So it's a wonderful thing.
And I love that it's turned into, like, you know how like a Kleenex or a Xerox, like, there are words that are brands that turn into actual, like, you know, into actual nouns of sorts. So yeah. It was like, you know, thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
That's the thing on TikTok. Oh my God, it's crazy. Yes.
I love that TED has transcended that. It's part of the culture. Yeah. It's part of, like, you know, how people think about when they're giving these really deep talks and or expressing right. their opinions. I find that really interesting. So in your role on a, maybe not a day to day, because I'm sure there's no single day that is the same, but what is your role like? Like, what do you do at TED? Obviously you have a lot of responsibilities from strategy to content, but tell folks a little bit more about what you do.
I always, if I put my role into one word, it's growth. And so how do we continue to grow the stickiness and the tentacles that TED has within society, within culture, within innovation space? We like, from an experience standpoint, we call ourselves the playground for the curious, right? So when you come to a TED event, it's not about you. It's not a B2B conference. It's not necessarily a B2C experience. It's about, how do I become a better human being? Where am I at in life where I need to be motivated or inspired to think differently? Where can I just see cool stuff happening? So it's all of these things wrapped in one. And so for me, it is about, how do we continue to grow that? How do we continue to grow that with our in-person experiences? How do we continue to grow our brand so more people continue to love and connect with TED? How do we grow our partnerships with organizations who want to be aligned with our mission and what we do? And so in those areas, I'm always thinking about growth.
I absolutely love that. And, you know, not that many people get to go to the actual TED event in Vancouver. It's, mm-hmm. you know, you have a limited, you know, there's a big space, but there's a limited amount of people, right?
Right.
What, for people that might be interested in going this year or in a couple years or whatever, or they dream of going, that's their goal. What do you, like, how would you describe the experience of going to TED?
So I have been in the events industry, the convening industry, my entire career. So we're talking about 1999 until now, all of my jobs have been in that. And I have never been to an event like a TED event when I joined TED. And the reason why is because most events, it is either this festival, entertainment, party type aspect, or it's business, it's transactional. And TED is everything and nothing at the same time, because what you're doing is you're going into this space that is retreat-like. And let's take Vancouver. We have close to 80 TED Talks that happen over 5 days. And so you're watching all these amazing people give such inspiring and motivating things off of various topics you wouldn't even think you would mm-hmm. care about. And you walk away and you're blown away because you've connected with the story mm-hmm. of that speaker. But that's just one aspect of the event experience. Then we have something called discovery sessions, where it's not about you hearing from someone telling you how to do something. It is about someone helping you be inspired or to get your hands dirty or to break something and fix it, to listen in silence at something, to just have space to do something you've never done before. We have brain dates where people will decide, I want to talk about this. Do you want to talk about this with me? And they'll put their topic out. And a person was like, I'm going to come to your brain date and just have a discussion with you about something. Like, people don't really get to do that often. Yeah. We have dinners, these very small, intimate experiences where at one dinner at my table, I had an astronaut. I had a person who puts data on the moon. I had a comedian, an army psychologist, and it's me. And I'm like, what kind of conversation?
Only at TED do you get that kind of...
what kind of conversation are we about to have? Like, oh my God, like this is amazing. And it was amazing. It was so much fun. And then you have like, so we keep you busy from morning until night, all day for 5 days straight, to the point where people walk away and say, I have a headache. And what a headache is, I've never been in a space like that, and I ache for a space like that. So it's just like, because it's such a unique and powerful space.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I'm hoping to be able to go this year. That's one of my big hopes. I'm hoping to make it, and you know, and share with everyone kind of the experience. You guys also made a really fun announcement of a new event that is coming. It's an evolution of something you've been doing, but maybe tell folks a little bit about TED Next, because I find that incredibly interesting and inspiring on kind of what comes next for you guys.
Yeah. So one of the things with leading events for TED was, how do we get people to engage with different aspects of TED? So we have like events that have different price points. We have very premium level events. And it was like, how do we, and then we have TEDx, which is like a $50 ticket, $100 ticket or whatever. So it's your entry into a TED experience. But then what's the middle ground? Because you can't go from a $50 ticket to multiple thousands for something else. And so what is that middle ground? And that's when, you know, we decided that we needed to create a space, as we consider TED, the Vancouver conference, the future of. So the future of tech, society, humanity, design, different, you know, things on that way. But what about, how do I play into that new society? And so TED Next is about the future you. And so what do you need to think about for yourself? Because we get to a point where we're on this cusp within our life where we like, do I pivot? Do I want to do something different? Do I want to think different? Do I want to go into a whole different type of career? Or do I want to be more of an activist? I want to change society. I want to build something. I want to be an entrepreneur, whatever. Like, how do I figure out all of that stuff that's floating within me? And so the future you, that's what TED Next, what's next for yourself. Within your journey as a person. It's not just about career development. It is about personal development. It is about finding community of others who are building and changing and thinking about things differently and really kind of connecting and bouncing off of each other of what that could look like. So that's what TED Next is all about. It's in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It's in October of this year. We think it's a much more, you know, affordable ticket price for a 3-day full experience, October 22nd through the 24th. So we are super proud of this. It has been received extremely well because it, like, people are like, I get it. It makes sense. Yeah. Future of, future me, future you. This is what I want to do.
And I think a lot of our listeners are going to be inspired, you know, to attend something like a TED Next. A TED, of course, like that's the aspirational that most of us want to go to, right? But I think TED Next is, I like that retrospective perspective of like, what if I'm in a time of transition? What if I'm pivoting? Yes. Like, this is my time to, these are my 3 days to focus on the future of me. And I absolutely love that concept. So I'm a big thinker. Like, I love thinking the future of, but I do love that idea of going and really taking the time to focus on yourself and every part of yourself, not just your career.
And really,
I love that. I absolutely
And how
love
you
that.
Plug into the future mm-hmm. of, you need to think about, what do I need to do for myself to make sure that I'm moving in the right direction for how I want culturally and society to be and how I can play a part in that.
Well, and I can imagine that a lot of people that will go to TEDx Next will go on to build the future of.
That's right.
The future of everything that will happen. And it's kind of, I guess it's like this, it's like a full circle situation, right?
Full circle.
I love that you guys are doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm. When you're thinking about the future of, you know, what are you excited about? What's something that you're really interested or excited about when it comes to the future? And obviously the future is such a broad term and it means so many things to many different people, but what are you excited about?
I have to say I'm excited about the technology revolution. I don't think any time in our world, and I could be completely wrong, has things spun so fast with that. And so, yes, there comes some challenges with that because you don't know how far it's going to spin. But you do know that there's so much benefit to growth as an individual, even the tools and tactics that we use to use our daily life. Like, there's really nobody, and I'm sure there's somebody, but use typewriters anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a moment that happened, and now we use computers, and it's not a bad thing to use computers. Mm-hmm. Like, it's helpful or whatever. Once upon a time, the internet did not exist. Mm-hmm. And now we have information at our fingertips on our phones, you know, every day. So it can be just so transformative and so great for society. And I'm an optimist, and I'm hopeful that a lot of that is going to kind of help me and my family and my child, who's now 20 years old and who is in the middle of figuring out his life and how he wants to contribute to society and humanity or whatever, and how he can use some of these new tools to not just be a number. Like, he could really build something amazing and be a part of that. So I think that's what I'm optimistic about.
I am too. And like, I listen to my children. I have three kids, and they're the best windows into the future, right? The best windows into the future I've got. And like, I hear them say things. Like, I remember my daughter a couple years ago said she wanted to be a lunar food scientist.
What?
I'm like, okay, I know that might be an option when she's older, right? Wow. I did a LinkedIn post a couple years ago about that, right? And Amy Webb was actually posting from South By that her daughter, the future lunar architect, for example. And I'm like, I love that there's these, you know, with technology, with space travel, with everything that's happening, this convergence and acceleration of technology in ways we've never seen, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
The opportunities are endless. And I'm just like you, an optimist. I believe that, I don't know, I see this inflection point we're in and this convergence of all these technologies, right? AI, spatial computing, like, we're about to start the same type of impact as mobile did in the world. We're about to start another cycle of that.
Right.
And what is going to come is extremely interesting, right? So what better moment to go to a TED experience, you know, whether it's TED or TED Next or a TEDx event, than now, right? At this cusp and this convergence. So
absolutely. Yeah. And we're showcasing all of that. Like, there's so much talk through AI. We've actually done a couple of offshoots now. We have the TED AI conference that's
that was
dedicated
in San Francisco last year, I remember.
Yeah, it's in San Francisco again in October. Yeah. And now we're doing a TED AI in Vienna. So we're having that in October. So it's just like,
October's a busy month.
Your
family is not going to see you, Monique. You're not going to be anywhere in October. You're going to be traveling all the whole month.
Absolutely.
Why do you think it's important more now than ever to inspire others and share new ideas with the world? We talk about the tech convergence, but why do you think it's important at this moment?
You know, there is a little bit of a melancholy to me about kind of where we're at within society, with the divisiveness, with maybe, you know, information being manipulated in a way for people to pick sides about something. And so it's important that we have spaces where you can tap out of that for at least a little bit, and or just get a brain spa, is what I like to call TED. To have a space where it is something that will spark you to think differently about something. And you can't do that if you are just being bombarded by all of this negativity and all of this divisiveness and all of these other things. And if you are in just an optimistic, positive environment, hearing something, and you might not agree. There's people on the stages that come on our stages that you will absolutely be like, I don't agree with this. You want to debate it or whatever. But to know there is a civil, you know, you can be civil in debating someone about an idea. It's just an idea that could spark a very positive change, and or I want to understand more, and being open to those spaces to want to understand, listen to understand, instead of just listening to me responding and just getting upset about something. It's amazing. So that's why I said I've never been to anything like a TED conference, because, you know, when you go to conferences, I've worked mostly in the B2B space. The first thing a person asks you is, where do you work? What do you do?
What do you do?
And at TED, the first thing they ask you is, did you just hear what he said or she said? What do you think? think about that or whatever. And you have this very authentic conversation where any type of representative you had mm-hmm. melts away because someone is just interested in you mm-hmm. and in your opinion about a topic. And that's it. Or like, did you enjoy it? What did it spark in you? How did you feel? All of that good stuff. Those are the questions that are the first questions that bubble up to the surface. Nobody's caring about your job title. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very special space to be in.
I feel like it's true connection, humanity, going back to that connection, going back to the fire, like the fireplace, right? The fireside and kind of having that face-to-face engagement, right? That we so much need. When you said the word brain spa, it reminded me, I feel like brain spa is the opposite of doom scrolling, which a lot of us tend to do because we get into our algorithms and our apps and our stuff and we just doom scroll, right? Brain spa seems to me to be the antidote to that, to really just sit with an idea for 15 minutes or whatever and really think, like listen to what someone has to say about that. So I absolutely love that. Anything else you want to share with folks about TED and what you guys are doing?
I think if you are looking to disconnect from just the daily grind of something, I remember, sitting in looking at the TED Connect app and looking at a schedule mm-hmm. of TED Talks and thinking, okay, I'm going to go to this. This is going to be great, picking this stuff out. But you're sitting in a session that has about 8 speakers in one session. A lot of people don't know that because you see an edited version of a TED Talk.
Yeah.
It is a theme mm-hmm. for that session, and you'll have multiple speakers speaking from one idea based off of that theme. So you're sitting in there for an hour and a half of mm-hmm. straight people giving TED Talks at a time. And you're thinking, this person is going to resonate with me. And it's not. It's someone completely different. Talk about mammals or something that you're like blown away. And you're like, oh my God, I connected to this. And I had no idea I would, because the storytelling aspect, mm-hmm. how they made it seem so simple and created something that was so interesting just from telling their own personal story in their mm-hmm. authentic voice, in their authentic way. As a human being, I connected to another human being. It wasn't just about the topic. And so I think that's very special to kind of have that, So when people look at our stuff on, YouTube or come to TED.com, they're just getting this snippet of an edited version of a talk. But, we have virtual passes to our conferences, too. We sell something called a TED Live Pass, where you get to see the whole experience, that whole hour and a half, those different sessions, and see the full context of an idea and of a talk. So I think people engaging in TED in a different way other than just the snippet version of it mm-hmm. is really beneficial and super special.
Yeah, and we'll include in the show notes links to both TED, TED Next, and TED Live, and all those sorts of things for folks that find this interesting. Monique, thank you for coming and spending some time with us. I know you're busy as can be. I mean, April's around the corner. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. It's really fun.
All right, so that was such a fantastic interview. I love that Monique talked about TED, the history of TED, what they've been doing, the things that they've been doing for 40 years are amazing. Also what people can expect out of their April event, which is, the 40-year anniversary, their big event, their event in Vancouver, which is the one that most of us kind of like listen to these amazing TED Talks. And then their event that they're going to be having in Atlanta in October called TED Next, which I'm hoping to be there. So great interview with Monique. You've been to TEDx. Ever done a TEDx talk?
Yeah, I did. In Nashville in 2017. It's on TED's website. You can still find it. It is a bit dated at this point. It's about virtual reality. There's parts of it that I think are timeless. Like, it's still, I think, worth watching. But you have to realize, it was done in 2017. And it, I think it was one of, if not the first TED Talk about VR that focused on enterprise. Not going to say it was, because there's a lot of TEDx's going all over the place, so you just never can be sure. But from everyone I talked to at TED, from all of the research, I think it was one of the first, if not the first, that was about strictly VR enterprise, how you design for work. And I'm pretty proud of it. I was really happy. Yeah. Most nerve-wracking talk of my life.
I know, right? It takes a lot to... I did a TEDx in 2016 in Costa Rica. Mine's in Spanish. I haven't done a TEDx talk or a TED talk in English, so I hope that happens for me one day. Mine was on VR and how we will tell stories, but it was more focused on consumer and stories and who will tell. But I agree with you. Nerve-wracking process.
Yeah, they've got real stringent rules and timelines, and you hit those marks and
But that's why it's so wonderful. TEDx talks or TED talks are fascinating and well done.
Yeah. And they will look at your talk and tell you what to change.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
For the better. Let me be clear. Yeah, yeah. It's amazing because you're often, when you're putting together a lot of these talks, as you know, you get hired or asked to go do a talk at a conference, and you go and you do that talk, and no one edits your talk. No one looks at it before you give the presentation. They just assume you're the professional. You can go and you can talk about this event. TED's a different animal. They look at your talk, mm-hmm. and then they'll give you critique, and it is like having a professional editor look at your talk and tell you what will work and won't work. I was so thankful for it, but man, it was just nerve-wracking.
I agree with you, but there's such a magic, I can't wait. I wanted to talk before we go to Dispatch, Lily's Dispatch from the Fringe. I wanted to talk about a couple of fashion tech news. Obviously people that listen to this know I love fashion. It's like my thing.
You
I love
know.
It. Yeah. So a couple of things. There was a really interesting interview with Prada's CEO on the vision that they have for the future of fashion. Obviously it was related to AI helpers and virtual handbags, metaverse handbags, and kind of what they're envisioning. So we'll include a link to that. A very interesting perspective. One piece of news that I definitely want to mention, a big shout out to the team at Gucci, especially to Mikhail Barilaro, Gucci's VP of Brand Innovation Ventures. I've known him for several years. Fantastic. He's been leading this for a while. They are going to be launching kind of like a partner experience in the Vision Pro on April 3rd, if I'm not wrong. And it is in combination with the documentary Who is Sabato Di Sarno, a Gucci story. Which is introducing folks to Sabato and kind of their new creative director and what he's been doing, et cetera, et cetera. He's been brilliant. They're doing a partner experience for the Vision Pro. And that's going to come out April 3rd. I might get invited pretty soon to do a demo of it. So big shout out to the Gucci team. Gucci's always leading. They're always at the forefront.
They are.
Always at the forefront. In one of Mikhail's posts, he mentioned that this came from a brainstorming. And they're always trying to push the envelope. They're one of the first to always jump into all sorts of tech. I just love their mentality. They have no fear. I love it.
I want to know when we're going to see a brand like a Gucci come into the space and create their own designer head straps for the headsets, right? There's this whole area that I feel like, especially if you see the Apple Vision Pro's head, the knitted head strap, where it's okay, neat, but it could be cooler. That could be more fashionable. And I could see a company coming out to do something like that. And I think it would actually, for a select market, would sell pretty well. Especially if they could combine it with an improved use case of not only comfort, but some people sweat in headsets and things like that. I think that there's a lot that these fashion companies actually know about materials that a company like Apple actually doesn't. Mm-hmm. And they have to rely on probably some type of consultant or agency to kind of go through a lot of the things that they don't know. We kind of assume that these large tech companies know everything, but it doesn't always work like that. So it'll be interesting to see if we ever see those areas kind of get commandeered by the fashion market one day.
Well, I think once we have a version 2 or, maybe not this version.
Yeah.
This version's for the geeks, totally. So we'll see. I think once we get further versions, there's going to be a bigger race into, the fashion and how it looks. So yeah, congratulations to the Gucci team once again. We'll include links to information on Gucci's launch in Vision Pro and also what Prada CEO has talked about when it comes to AI and the future fashion, as well as virtual fashion. So we'll do that. Now we're going to go to Lily's Dispatch from the Fringe. And I'm going to ask you a question before we go into it, Lee. Would you get a massage from a robot?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, why not?
Yeah, me too. I mean, I love my masseuse, like the one I go see normally. Like, I wouldn't change her for the world, but yeah, I would definitely do that.
I would not get chiropractic from a robot.
Ah, ouch,
that
no.
sounds like
that,
a nightmare.
That sounds scary. That sounds like probably, yeah, there's no, I don't want a robot cracking my bones or fixing my, no. Massage, yeah, you know, I think I'm good with that. So, yeah, no chiropractic from the humanoid robot. No, thank you. All right, Lily, take us to Dispatch from the Fringe.
Hello, Kathy and Lee. Welcome to this week's Dispatch from the Fringe, where I'm bringing you a robot that gives massages. This robot is from a company called Acescape, and an editor from Mashable went to get a massage from this robot. It's actually two mechanical arms, where you lay on a specially outfitted massage table and the two arms massage your back and backside. As you're laying on your stomach, instead of looking down at the floor, you look down at a tablet. So you have control of where the robot is massaging, control pressure, and things like that. This robot isn't just any robot, but it has artificial intelligence inside. The robot and AI can generate over 1.1 million 3D data points to accurately map your body's position on the table, and it can identify key anatomical points for a targeted massage. The AI massage robot is coming to some Equinox locations this spring. It's $60 for a 30-minute session and $120 for an hour-long session, which isn't that bad. So what do you think? Would you trust your massage to a robot?
All right. So that was great. Five reasons why someone is quitting a human masseuse. I don't want to quit mine. I love her, but yay.
I looked this up and it does look very interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is effectively two robotic arms. It's very large. And you have a table and it just like can see the human form and knows how to. So I think that there's like some logic there. Now, can it respond to immediate feedback of like, oh my God, that's too hard. That hurts. Please stop. Oh no, my shoulder's out of joint. I don't know.
there's this little thing when you're facing down, at least, that you can regulate how
like
hard it goes.
Button.
But if, you know, yeah, eject, stop. But I think, I just don't want to be there if it's having an issue, you know. Normally, like if the masseuse is having an off day, it won't feel as great, right? If they're having a bad day, you'll feel the tension. But yeah, I don't want to have a massage by a robot that's having a bad day.
If it like
systems
gets
are not
into
working.
A joint and then it like freezes and you're just pinned to the table.
Can you imagine? System alert.
I can't imagine.
No, I don't want to. I would do it like maybe at an airport. I think I could do like, you know, because I've done like, I did the nail thing where it paints your nails, the robot paints your nails. Mm. I don't want it to do my like cuticles or anything. I'm not ready for
as
that.
As soon as
I'm
the knives come out, you're like,
yeah,
eh,
no. It can paint my nails, yes, but no cuticle situation here. Yeah, no, thank you. So yeah, I think with the robot masseuse as well. Like if it's something simple, it's always
so it can paint your nails, but it's not doing mascara, right?
Like well, there's a robot that does lashes, and I'm curious. I don't know if I want to let it too close to my eyes.
That's
but I would totally sit for that. I would be like, okay, let's do one eye. At least I have the other one left. So I don't know. But lots. That's when people are like, what job can't, you know, AI and robots replace? I'm like, nothing. Pretty much it can replace everything
if
in the future.
If you want it to.
If you want it to, right? I don't know. But anyway, I think that, you know, that's the show for today. I think we're going to have so many news from GTC and GDC to talk about next week. So
totally.
I mean, good episode. This is more of a snack, you know, a little snackable episode because we tend to go longer. But yeah, I got to get back to all the GTC, GDC fun. All right, Lee, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
And everyone, thanks for joining us for Tech Magic. Come for the tech, stay for the magic. Please subscribe, share this with your friends, and send us any suggestions.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.